Good Saturday news. Attention everyone. Be sure not to shut out the voice. Deliberation. Because we are going to have a test Saturday night likely. And it will be very essential that you know all the news that has gone prior to the last test up till now. First is a commentary about the CIA imperialist executioner. If there ever was an institution which corresponds perfectly to the character and requirements of U.S. imperialism, it is the CIA, Central Intelligence Agency. A secret police force charged with pursuing those activities for which a nominally democratic government does not want to take public responsibility is a tool which no imperialist power can afford to forego. If war, especially unopened and undeclared, is the real state of affairs between capitalist rivals and between imperialism and those it oppresses, the compulsion for an organization such as the CIA is virtually, absolutely necessary and inevitable. It is liberal critics to the contrary. The Central Intelligence Agency, funded by our tax dollars, which causes me deep pain and should cause you the same, is not some rogue elephant which develops its actions and policies outside the control of the bourgeoisie state apparatus, as Philip Agee points out in a new book, Dirty Work. The agency is at the very heart of the apparatus, one of the principal executioners of imperialist policy, de facto fascist policy centered in Washington. The House Intelligence Investigating Committee, headed by Representative Otis Pike, Democrat, New York, concluded in its official report that all evidence in hand suggests that the CIA, far from being out of control, has been utterly responsive to the instruction of the President and the Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, who really runs the scenes for the Trilateral Commission behind the scenes. I'm speaking of Brzezinski. The CIA is a part of that repressive, dictatorial apparatus, including the army and the police, which make up, as Lenin pointed out, the chief instruments of capitalist state power. However, with the growing size of the dictatorial repressive apparatus of the state and the increasing dependency of monopoly capital on them, these institutions do, in part, take on a life of their own. And it happens from time to time, there's indeed a falling out between rival fascist, oppressive, repressive agencies, and between the police power and the political power. This ever-present power struggle within the state apparatus should not blind us to the struggle. The fact, however, that all of these agencies are nothing more than the instruments of monopoly capital, even when those whose careers are bound up with one particular organization jockey for positions with the counterparts in others, it's just the contradictions of capitalism. That's why it falls, finally. Because there's always competition between capitalists. At times when internal contradictions in the ruling class are particularly intense, these rivalries can become the vehicles through which such contradictions are momentarily resolved. The failure to understand the dual character of the repressive apparatus leads to a serious political error. Ultra-leftists who see the bourgeoisie as a completely unified class, an impossibility given by the inherent competition between rival monopoly capitalist groups, either minimize or ignore the contradictions within the ruling class. But as Stalin, the great man of steel, pointed out, these contradictions are not only an objective fact, they actually constitute an important strategic reserve of the revolution, said Stalin, the once great leader of the Soviet Union, which is now the avant-garde of liberation. Even more serious, however, indeed, is especially today, is the error characteristic of revisionism and reformism, which holds out the illusion that instructions, that institutions like the CIA or the police can become democratized or neutralized by being brought under the more effective control of the bourgeoisie political apparatus. Stuff and nonsense. Such a view is inherent in the revisionist system and the statement that it is possible for the U.S. under capitalism to pursue a democratic foreign policy. Every evidence clearly shows that the U.S. is supporting nothing abroad outside the United States except fascist dictatorships. Genuine Marxists and Leninists are more than willing to see one arm of the bourgeoisie state expose the workings of another. More than that, we insist that they do so, and will hold them to that. We'll hold them to that, and that task when, as they inevitably will, they stop short of a full and thorough exposure. We will speak out our findings to people sample and encourage them to do more, recognizing the value of such evidence when it comes from the horse's mouth. But our purpose in doing so is not to improve the bourgeoisie state or sow the illusion that rooting out one or another official or group of malefactors, social degenerates, will ever make the bourgeoisie state more than it is, the instrument for class rule and national oppression. Look at all the police strikes. They're always settled. Rather, it is to show the absolute dependency of monopoly capital on institutions such as the CIA, and to educate the working class and all the laboring masses the fact that it is the very existence and necessity of this armed power which requires that the revolutionary struggle for power proceed on the basis of the virtual inevitability, the absolute certainty of armed struggle or conflict and revolutionary violence as taught by Marx and Lenin. The Central Intelligence Agency has bled the U.S. of its taxes that should have gone to help the poor who are dying from starvation and actually freezing to death in the winters, has rightfully become an object of intense hatred by hundreds of millions throughout the world who have their aspirations to freedom hampered or thwarted by the activities of imperialism's secret police. But our objective here, our object, rather, cannot be merely to cut off the imperialist monster's trigger finger and then believe that the job has been done. For it is in the essential nature of this beast that it will grow a new one just as quickly as it loses the old. Keep that in mind. A joint Soviet-Syrian communique has been released in Moscow, capital of the Soviet Union, and the Syrian president has been holding talks with the General Secretary of the Soviet Communist Party, Leonid Brezhnev. The talk centered on the situation in the Middle East. The communique denounced the sellout again, the Camp David agreements between Israel, Egypt, as a collusion behind the backs of the Arab people. The Soviet Union and Syria believe that such a deal can only heighten the tense situation in the Middle East. The two sides feel that a just Middle East peace can be restored with a complete Israeli withdrawal from all occupied Arab territory by assuring the right of the Arab people of Palestine to have a country of their own, being that USA and Britain dispossessed them of their land for the Zionists in 1948. The joint communique says such a settlement can be achieved within the framework of the Geneva Peace Conference and must be done so. The Soviet Union and Syria have condemned Israel, their interference in the affairs of Lebanon, and have reaffirmed their desire to promote normalization in that country. Soviet Union will continue to help Syria strengthen her defenses. The joint communique condemned the imperialist power's interference in Africa and voiced support for the national liberation movement in Namibia, Zimbabwe, and Union of South Africa, where concentration camps exist all over the tip of Africa, and they're upheld by our tax dollars and multinational corporations from USA. Israeli warship entered Lebanese waters and shelled the western section of Beirut, the once beautiful capital, most beautiful city in the world, one of the most. The bombardment lasted 3.5 hours. Israeli aircraft also flew over southern Lebanon. The Israeli armed provocation attempted to heighten the tension further so as to split the Arabs and divide the country. The bombardment that lasted 3.5 hours has taken an untold amount of innocent casualties, women, children, and elderly people. Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko, in an interview for National Soviet Television, covered the problem of strengthening peace, the Middle East, and Soviet-American relationships. He said that the Soviet Union favors good relations with the United States, believing that peace between the two countries would also mean world peace, that nuclear war will damage too many in Canada and USA and other parts of Europe to even think about it. He noted some peace between the two countries would also mean, he noted some shifts in the position, rather, of the American side in the right direction. He feels that Carter is becoming aware that he is being led down the pathway to a nuclear holocaust. And he said, should he be well prepared in order to sign important documents, President Carter should. Most of all, the treaty limiting strategic arms. He also noted the interest that the current United Nations General Assembly of the Soviet initiatives aimed at putting on an end to the arms race entirely. Most countries, he remarked, have supported a proposal to sign an international agreement. Most countries, he remarked, have also an international convention and the continuous discussion that were to guarantee the security of non-nuclear states. In regards to the Middle East, Gromyko condemned the separate Israeli-Egyptian agreements as being counter to the demands of establishing any peace in the region of the Near East. Leonid Brezhnev and Alexander Kosygin have congratulated the German Democratic Republic, most modern country outside the Soviet Union, great modern country, East Germany, communist, on the event of their 29th anniversary, their birthday. The GDR country is making important contributions to the struggle to extend a peacefully mutual advantageous cooperation among countries and for ending the arms race and ensuring disarmament. The message said, the German Democratic Republic works actively to consolidate the unity of the socialist community. The Soviet people value highly the deepening contact between the two countries and the internationalist unity of the Soviet Communist Party and Socialist Unity Party of Germany. The striking manifestation of the cooperation of the Soviet Union and the German Democratic Republic was the recent flight, joint flight of the cosmonauts of the two countries in an unparalleled venture that has gone to the 122nd day in outer space, building a whole city. Nigeria's foreign minister has spoken out against the Rhodesian fascist white prime minister Smith's invitation to the United States. Speaking at the United Nations, he said Smith will take the opportunity to win approval of so-called internal settlement and to have economic sanctions with them. He demanded from Washington that the invitation be canceled. Nigeria is a capitalist country, drawing more and more away from USA and closer to Soviet and non-aligned policies. A new chairman has been elected to the Kenyan African National Union, the ruling party of Kenya. He has been acting president since the death of Jomo Kenyatta just a few weeks ago. The decision was taken unanimously at the party's national conference in Nairobi. Villages from all over Kenya took part at the same time. The new chairman was also named and the new president of the country. And since candidates for the post of head of state can be nominated only by political parties, and since KANU is the only party in Kenya, he became president automatically. Ethiopian armed forces have fully claimed the city of Mandevira from the hands of the separatists backed by U.S. imperialists and her lackeys. The city is situated south of the administrative center of the northern province of Eritrea, according to the Ethiopian Socialist News Agency, which is an ally, as you know, of the USSR, the vanguard of world liberation. A large amount of arms and explosives have been seized that had been sent to them by the USA and her lackeys. Again, our tax dollars, when seniors are being put out on the streets, don't have enough money, they have to eat dog food. That's where our tax dollars go, to kill people and to try to stop people from having their own way of life, freedom. In Tanzania, the Daily News has sharply criticized the USA imperialist government and multinational corporations of raping Africa. It says their activities on the continent have made the developing countries dependent on the very capitalist systems that aggravated their economic structures and cultures. This was said in the face of the fact that Tanzania is heavily in debt to the International Monetary Fund, so it was a brave act indeed. The purpose of such monopolies, the paper says, is to gain maximum profit and to perpetuate the system of exploitation of the working people of Africa. Such corporations as U.S. Lockheed, USITT, United Steel USA, and other U.S. and English multinational monopoly companies conducted repeatedly as tools of imperialism, inciting of internal disorders, and overthrowing local governments in the countries that began leading the influence of monopoly capitalism. Tanzania President Nair said, "I do not want to hear one more word from President Carter's lips that should be dripping with blood about his concern for human rights." Brave. Bravo to you, President Nair, who's a close friend of our own beloved Prime Minister, Prime Minister Forbes Burnham of our party, the People's National Congress. He is President Nair that made the statement as the President of Tanzania. The President of Cyprus has demanded the withdrawal of all foreign troops from the island, in keeping with the UN decision. He was speaking at the UN General Assembly. He said that the problems of the two ethnic communities, the Greeks and the Turks, can be resolved on long lines of complete demilitarization of the island. He called for the holding of a representation international conference under the auspices of the United Nations to obtain a settlement in Cyprus. The Human Rights Commission of the Organization of American States heard the testimony of the inhabitants of Leon in Nicaragua. That town was destroyed by dictator Somoza's troops when they were suppressing the popular uprising in September. All the inhabitants were killed. Political opponents of the fascist regime of Nicaragua, upheld only by USA and churchmen, also spoke before the commission. Members of the commission were also shown burnt and destroyed buildings throughout every city. During the uprising for freedom, Leon was bombed and shelled until all the people were killed. In other parts of Nicaragua, it estimates perhaps 50,000 people have now been killed. During the clear revolution for justice in Nicaragua, in the capital city of Managua, bomb explosions are still heard all night long. Somoza, the fascist dictator put in power by U.S. Marine Corps way back to 1933, in an aggressive act by U.S. imperialism, is being upheld and backed by USA, and so Carter should not have the nerve to mention again human rights. But Somoza's having reinforced concrete walls built around his palace. He is a man without a people, a dictator who rules and owns land, but the people are almost totally against him. The cargo ship Progress 4 today docked with the Salud orbital station. It brought Salute crew supplies and fuels for continuation of their experiments in laser. That's a good way to stop nuclear bombs coming from the USA, and heat radiation, and a number of other experiments that the Soviets do not choose to make public to the world. It also brought letters and gift parcels from the cosmonaut families. The last of the news will be a commentary on Korea. Korea, just some 20 years of upholding socialism, coming towards the anniversary of the founding of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, the communist country. Little is known in the United States about this socialist country, yet in its 3 decades now nearly of independence, the DPRK has made dramatic achievements from what was a colonial, semi-feudal economy, if not a feudal one, in 1948. Then they were bombed into hell till there was nothing left standing when the war ended with U.S. imperialism in 1953. So they're barely 20 years old, digging out of the graveyards. Nothing was left standing. One bomb for every individual was dropped on the North Koreans. The North Koreans have built a socialist society with one of the highest standards of living in the world, in and of itself. This was no simple task, and I'm not reading from a pro-socialist magazine or giving comments for a pro-socialist magazine. I'm giving one from Harper's. But it was complicated by 3 years of U.S. aggression, which all but devastated the economy in the capital, Pyongyang, P-Y-O-N-G-Y-A-N-G. For example, at the end of the Korean War in 1953, it is estimated that no more than 3 buildings, if any at all, were left standing. Following the war's end in 1953, the Koreans began to rebuild their country. Their success then have not been based on magic or good luck or favorable weather conditions, because cloud seeding has been used against them by our tax dollars through the CIA. The DPRK, Communist North Korea, attributes its advances to a strong political line summed up in the Korean word Juche, J-U-C-H-E. The word does not have an equivalent in English. Roughly, it can be translated as self-reliance. Guyana gives much credit to that word, and they are very good friends of the DPRK. As developed by President Kim Il-sung, Juche, the concept stands on 3: legislative, political independence, economic self-reliance, and military self-defense. An integral part of the Juche concept is the axiom that the problems facing the Korean Revolution, and there have been numerous difficulties over the years, must be solved on the basis of Korea's concrete conditions, not on the basis of developmental theories mechanically imported from U.S. imperialism, basing itself on the Juche, or the Juche, or Juche, J-U-C-H-E concept. Someone else can give you a proper pronunciation. The DPRK industrialized its agricultural country in only 8 years. Now, this is the picture we saw night before last. The beauty of their organization, where they worked 16 hours, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of study, and then 8 hours of rest. And it was this industrialization that laid the groundwork for establishing an independent economy, which, as the Koreans realized from their colonial experience, was the only way to truly safeguard their political sovereignty. There is such unity and solidarity in this country that they do not have one jail in the country inhabited by over 15 million people. Perhaps more important, remembering that U.S. troops are still poised on North Korea's southern borders, ready to invade at any moment, this industrialization created the basis for the DPRK's own defense capability. The Korean people have been the main beneficiaries of these significant accomplishments. health care, and education are free, with a universal 11-year compulsory education system for everyone. Comprehensive daycare centers have been established for working women. Recreational centers have been provided throughout the country of the most modern variety, like our carnivals and circuses. There are state subsidies on basic foodstuffs, particularly rice. Free clothing is given to school children and workers. Subsidies mean that the rice costs little or nothing. Large-scale construction of new housing has guaranteed livable housing, all for now, no rent at all. Now that's what work brings about. We can free so many people, and if we work now, we can get to a place that doesn't work that hard. But we must work, and our observers, I'm instructing the security to see that their job is done and that every name is put down. The equality and prosperity, and the supervisors will be held responsible, by the way, for any of your workers that are not doing what they should be doing. The equality and prosperity enjoyed in the northern part of the country stand in contrast to the deprivation, the utter poverty of the masses in the South. With an economy that is the wholly owned subsidiary of foreign interest, everything in South Korea is owned by multinationals, the military-industrial complex of USA, a state that is among the most repressive, the most cruel, brutal, fascist tyranny in the world, and a government that remains propped in power by admittedly 40,000 U.S. troops, and some say it's double that, and hundreds of nuclear bombs. The South is a living example of all that socialism in the North has overcome. And when the USA wasn't in South Korea and put up their dictatorship, Syngman Rhee, right after the War of Liberation, before the Soviets could free the South too, the North moved down with the South. The South rose up, and in a matter of just a matter of hours, South and North had reunified. It took USA might, planes, and threat of nuclear missiles and bombs by Senator McCarthy, or General MacArthur rather, to bring down the South Korean resistance. It is said by all pollsters that no dictatorship, including the present one, has had more than 1.5% of the support of the people. Sooner or later, South Korea's people will rise in rebellion against conditions there and demand the reunification of their country as Vietnam has done under socialism and the backing of the avant-garde Soviet Union. For 2,000 years, there was one Korea. Imagine USA wanting to divide a country that it was 2,000 years united. And 25 years of enforced artificial division will not change that fact. All the bayonets the U.S. Army can muster will never be able to sever Korea permanently. For progressives in the United States, the Korean situation presents a compelling demand for opposition to the United States government's policy there. Because of the threat of revolution, the United States imperialists know it is necessary to maintain its huge de facto fascist army in the South. The hands of U.S. imperialism and its lackeys reaches directly into the lives of all Koreans. We here in Guyana, who do not sympathize with the way our tax dollars were being spent in the USA, have the opportunity and the duty to help remove it. If we work and produce, we can send out funds to help other systems. We also already have helped the DPRK while we've been here. But we've got to do more. We've got to get our people to freedom. I would think you'd take joy in just working to make funds for Zimbabwe and Patriotic Front, or the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, or Namibia. I would think that would turn you on. But some it doesn't. So observers will. Yes, because of the threat of revolution, the United States knows it's necessary to maintain its huge fascist army in the South. The hands of imperialism reaches directly into the lives of all Koreans. We here have the opportunity, and as I said before, the duty, to help remove it. Who in the world is better situated to take up this fight than we, the only socialist movement, as the different guests have said in the last few days, in the United States? If we don't take it up, who will? We must always work. We know the night's coming when no man can work. We know nuclear war looks inevitable. We know it looks like almost an absolute. But as we commemorate this 25th anniversary of socialism really being free in the DPRK, we join with progressives the world over in demanding U.S. imperialism out of Korea, bringing the troops home like Carter promised, even though he hasn't kept one of his campaign promises. Not one. Jobs he promised for blacks. All kinds of ecology things. There are all types of things. I could go on longer than is necessary. It's been a half hour of news. I want to give you less news so you can digest what...